Okay, so now we can have a stretch, have a scratch, have a sneeze, have a cough, and just to get ready for this evening's Dhamma talk. Usually wait for a few people to come in who just came late, others to go to toilet. I'm very happy to see or to hear other people coughing as well. I don't feel so alone. It's nice to have some friends. Very good. So, I was going to talk about something else tonight, but I thought I'd talk about how to deal with being sick, having coughs, having hay fever, whatever. Because that means I've got an excuse to cough during my talks, which I can't stop anyway. And that's the most important thing. Look, you know, just having a body, every now and again we have some sort of sickness. And there's a lot of things we can do with sickness to take away the worst part of it. And of course, one of the things which bothers a lot of people in our Western society is that people get guilty about being sick. Especially as a monk, I remember some years ago, I forget what I had, some sort of virus or something. And I remember going into the local doctor's surgery. And you know, you always have to wait in the queue there, waiting and waiting and waiting until the doctor actually calls you in. As I was waiting out there, because at that time I used to give talks in the local prison, and one of the prison officers also had an appointment that morning, and he came in too, and he looked at me, and he said to me, "I never expected to see you in here. I thought I was in a brothel or in a pub or someplace I shouldn't be." Because people think that monks, you know, we eat good food, we exercise, we have no stress, that we're not supposed to go sick. I felt so guilty that monks aren't allowed to get sick because we're supposed to live a good life. No, even monks get sick too, but that really made it very clear to me that why do people feel guilty about being sick? And from that I started to work out the reason why. And this is the reason why people feel guilty about being sick, and why it creates another level of suffering and pain on the normal process of having a body called sickness. And that is that whenever you go to the doctor and you have some sort of complaint, what do you say? How do you speak? You go in there and say, "Doctor, there's something wrong with me. I'm sick. My throat is wrong, my tummy is wrong, my brain is wrong, that something is wrong." Can you see? That means you're starting to get into a guilt trip. We're always saying that being sick is something wrong. Just that much is the cause of a huge amount of guilt. It means that someone has made a mistake, and you take on that mistake, that, you know, you're sick, that's not healthy, that you made a big mistake in life. But of course that's not true. Everybody gets sick. Is there anybody in this room who's never been sick in their life? I think, you know, must be a bit sick in the head if you put it there. We've all been sick from time to time. So, now if it really was true, if it really, really was true that you've never been sick in your life, you'd be really weird. In fact, you'd be such a unique case that the local medical school will probably do experiments on you and find out why is it that person has never been sick in their life. There'd be something very strange about you, something very wrong about you, that you've never been sick. So actually, really, it's right to be sick. It's natural to be sick. It's okay to be sick. So, What should you say when you go to see the doctor? Doctor, there's something right with me. I'm sick again. Some people, I've told that story before, and actually doctors have actually come up to me and said, we had one of your students come into my surgery today. You know why? Because they came in and said, doctor, there's something right with me. I'm sick. They know they must have come to Nolamara Temple. But seriously, it's important to be able to say there's something right with me, I'm sick, because it takes a lot of guilt away from the sickness. And when you take a lot of the guilt away and the stigma from being sick, it means, number one, you can go and see the doctor earlier. Because why is it that sometimes people wait until it's too late till they go and see the doctor? Because you think there's something wrong, that you're a failure, that you're scared, it's not right to be sick. You somehow, you know, you haven't exercised enough, you haven't eaten the right food, you haven't meditated long enough, you've made some bad karma, therefore you're sick. It's too much guilt about it, which is means it's wrong, and we don't actually own up to the fact we are sick. We don't catch it early enough so we can actually get healed and live a long life. But the main thing is that when we say it's wrong to be sick, we add this negativity in our mind. And one of the great sayings of the Buddha was, even if your body is sick, your mind doesn't need to be sick. The mind doesn't need to be in denial. So if you are sick, my motto is, enjoy it. There are a lot of benefits from being sick. You know, people you never knew care about you. They come and visit you in hospital. They give you all these nice flowers and other gifts. They never give that to me when I'm well. So I say, if you are sick, milk it for all it's worth. You have time off work. You can sit around and watch the TV and do whatever you like. So, enjoy your sickness. One of the troubles is that when you are sick, is people try and get rid of it too quickly. And when we have that negativity towards sickness, we try and get rid of it too quickly. That's why it lasts much longer than it should. So it's not just enjoying the sickness, it's being kind to your sickness, whatever it is. It is part of having a body, part of life. So we have to learn to embrace it and be kind to it. This story which I often always tell here about opening the door of your heart, having compassion and loving kindness is not just towards people, it's towards things, it's towards life. Having compassion to your sickness. In other words, being kind to it, opening the door of your heart to my sickness. Because that opening the door of your heart story is to be able to accept and embrace life, even the unpleasant part, let alone the pleasant part. But the unpleasant part as well, it's there to teach you something. It's there to sort of to learn from. And one of the things is, you know, it teaches you compassion and kindness. If you're really sick, you know what it's really like to hurt. And, you know, to be very, not much energy. Then you never pass by someone else who is sick and needs a bit of comfort. You know, it gives a sense of like this beautiful warmth and compassion between people. It shows you that, yes, you can't just be independent, look after yourself. There are times in each one of our lives where we really need some kindness and some care, sometimes full-on care from others. And that's a beautiful part of life. You know, the one thing about our monastic communities, you know, we always, you know, we are a little bit out of the city, but not too far. And we have all these rules which we have to keep, such as we're not allowed to cook for ourselves, we're not allowed to grow our own food. People actually were really quite surprised at that. Look, you know, you're healthy, you know, fit guys, why can't you make some food? Grow some food. And there's a rule, we can't do that, because if we could grow our own food, and if we could just cook our own food, we'd be self-sufficient. Which means we wouldn't need you. Which means we wouldn't have this beautiful relationship of looking after one another. When I was young, I always thought self-sufficiency was an ideal to try and attain. I actually even thought of, you know, trying to find a little commune somewhere and just grow everything and make your own electricity and power, your own water, be totally self-sufficient. But when I came across Buddhism, you realize, no, you could not do that. That was forbidden. Forbidden. And it took a while to understand why. Because if you are self-sufficient, you are saying you don't need anybody. And that makes you very lonely and takes away the beautiful compassion out of life. And every time I am sick, every time I'm weak, every time I make a mistake, every time things go wrong, I'm reminded I'm not self-sufficient, I need others. And that's a beautiful way of understanding the meaning of compassion and love. I know a few people who do try to become self-sufficient. They're saying, I don't need you. And they become very, very lonely people. You do need other people, and it's wonderful to need and be needed. So that's why that even though we are able to grow our own food, cook our own food, physically able, we won't do that. Otherwise, we could live in these monasteries with walls around, totally secluded from the world, without any rapport, without any contact, without the warmth of needing and being needed. So you may think that you are so wonderful, so strong, that you can live by yourself and be self-sufficient. But think about it. Is that a sort of world you like to live in? Or would you rather like to have these connections with others? Yeah, there are certain things I can't do. Please help me. There's certain things you can't do, and I'm willing to help you. And that's the beautiful warmth of not self-sufficiency, but codependency, where we need each other. That's called society, that's called our world. So every time you become sick, it just reminds you that you know that you do need other people. Every time you make a mistake, every time, that's one of the reasons why, you know, that when people actually even give me things which I don't really want, no, I accept them. And please, 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 though, look, please do me a favor out of kindness. Because I, you know, I'm coughing today, please don't give me some cough mixture or some Ayurvedic medicine or homeopathic medicine or herbal medicine or Chinese medicine, because that's happened so many times before. I've coughed in public just once, and the next day I've got all these different medicines. And people are so kind, they come up to me and say, you must take this medicine, it's very good for you, it cured my grandmother, or whatever they say. And, you know, I'm such a kind guy, I say, okay. And then the next one comes and says, this cured my son, you must take it, okay. And then they give me something else, you must take it, okay. And in the end, I have so much medicine, and I have to take the whole lot of it. And that really, really does make me very sick. So please don't do that to me. It's very kind. That's a trouble, being too kind. But anyway, it's just to look. I remember this story that one of the monks told me. This is many, many years ago. He was this very, very tough American monk, you know, from Chicago. And that's where the gangsters come from. Maybe, well, they don't all come from Chicago. Obama comes from Chicago too, but he's not a gangster. But I think you know what I mean. It's a very tough city. And this guy became a monk over in Thailand. And for the first time, he went to visit his family in Chicago. If you've ever been to Chicago, in the winter time it's really, really cold. Lots of snow and ice all over the place. And you know, I went there once, and it's one of the coldest places I've ever been to. And this monk went there, and he slipped on the sidewalk, and he broke his leg. So he had to go into hospital. And there he was in hospital with his leg in plaster, you know, feeling no sorry for himself. And his mother finally found out his son had an accident. And he told me when his mother came into the ward and saw her son in a plaster, she grinned from ear to ear. And he thought, what the heck? You're my mother. Why are you so happy I've broken my leg? And she said, because, son, you've been away for so long, now I have you exactly where I want. You can't run back to Thailand. Now I can mother you for the next month and you can't escape. If there's any mothers here, you know what I mean. They're having a grown-up son in hospital with a broken leg, but he's been away for about 5 or 6 years. It's paradise. Because that mothers love looking after their sons, and actually fathers do too, the daughters and everybody. You know, we like looking after each other. There's something in the human condition that where we can practice compassion and kindness, it gives us a huge high. We're needed, and we enjoy really looking after each other. And that's why it's wonderful being sick. It's your gift to other people so they can grow in compassion by looking after you. So next time you're sick at home, sick in hospital, say, don't feel guilty about this. Don't think you're a burden on other people. Don't think that, oh, I'm so sick, and other people must be really fed up with. No, you say, now I am the vehicle of compassion for you. Now, please, if you're, especially if you're a Buddhist, this is your great opportunity to make great good karma by looking after me and caring for me. You know, go for broke on it. Look after me. Here I am. So you don't feel guilty. You're an opportunity for others to be compassionate. Because if you weren't sick, if people weren't vulnerable, needy, there'd be no reason for compassion and kindness, would there? It's one of the problems in our life. Sometimes we are so self-sufficient, we don't need anything. We think we don't need anything, which creates such loneliness in our society. And we know what that loneliness means. It's depression. You know, people just don't live with each other. They live alone. And they sort of, they feel this terrible sense of meaningless. But having a nice situation where people can practice compassion and be kind is really important in life. For a good example, there's this whole story of the Dalai Lama years and years and years ago. This is one of those stories I read, you know, at the very beginning of my Buddhist life. And it was something which really moved me. It made me understand a little about what compassion is really about. Because this was before the Dalai Lama actually left Tibet. You know, he's obviously a famous young man at that time. And he would go from village to village visiting the people in Tibet. And there was a journalist from the United States was accompanying him doing one of the very first stories, you know, on the Dalai Lama. And as he was going from village to village, people were lining up to offer him gifts. You know, it's supposed to be good karma to offer someone like the Dalai Lama some gifts. But this was an American who didn't really understand what generosity, compassion was about. And so he started to get more and more upset because some of those gifts were coming from very, very poor people. And on this one occasion, in this one village, there was a woman who was obviously dirt poor. You know, hardly had anything, you could see by her rags. And she lined up, and when it came to her turn, she presented His Holiness the Dalai Lama with one of her skirts. Her best skirt is what she gave to the Dalai Lama. And that American, he just could not contain his anger and disgust any longer. He shouted, "What are you doing?" Now, I don't know if I got a cough, I'll really mess up my throat, but you can imagine what he would say. "What are you doing? Now, accepting a skirt from that poor white woman. You're so wealthy, you live in this great monastery, you have everything you want, and you don't need a skirt, you're a man. What do you want with a skirt? She needs it more than you shouldn't accept her. What are you doing that for? That's not right." And he had a point there. When I thought that, I read that, I thought, my goodness, what does a monk need with a woman's skirt? But then, you know, whenever you get someone gets angry at you or shouts at you, this is the way to react. You know, you're very quiet and soft. You take it, first of all. Now, that's the very good way of disarming other people's anger, by not giving anger back. You just sit there quietly, silently. Because if you give anger back, you just feed, you know, the other person's ill will. So you see this very often in, you know, great people. Someone shouts at you, but you just sit there, stand there quietly and wait. And when they're finished, then you can say something. Well, the Dalai Lama said, he said, "It's true, I don't need this skirt, but that woman needed to give it to me." And when I heard that, I thought, my goodness, that's wisdom. We all need to give to each other. Even though we may, you know, be on the surface self-sufficient, even though the Dalai Lama doesn't need any clothes, still, the woman needed to give it to him. And what a beautiful thing that was. He's saying, no, I'm not going to be self-sufficient, but I'm going to be vulnerable, needy. You can give me whatever you want. And I know I've taught that many times here, and it's true that many times people who come here to Nolamara have given me gifts. They've given me a comb. Even though I don't need a comb, sometimes you need to give me one. It's true. I've got many combs in my life. But isn't that good fun? You know, you give and, okay, I don't need a comb, but I accept it and I just give it to someone else tomorrow. And that's what the Dalai Lama did. The next village he went to, he'd now distribute that skirt to somebody else. And that way these gifts would go round and round and round. Because that's sickness, that's vulnerability, that means we have to need each other. And we deliberately need each other. And all of those of you who are living in a relationship together, please, for goodness sake, don't be so strong and so self-sufficient that, you know, you're telling your partner, I don't need you. Because if you do, there's no relationship left. Deliberately be vulnerable, be self-insufficient, telling the partner, yeah, you need her, you need him, which you do. And that way, it means that you're understanding why sicknesses, making mistakes, not being perfect is a beautiful way why we can have compassion. If everybody was so perfect, there'd be no need for compassion. If everybody was always healthy, we'd have no need for carers. It wouldn't be a terrible world if we had no carers. So for me, sickness is something which is part of our life and teaches us the meaning of kindness and compassion. And of course, for those of you who've really been through the really bad sicknesses, really been through the mill, a lot of pain, hospital for a long time, what do people say? They keep on saying, oh, the nurses were so fantastic, people were so good to me, they were so kind to me. It's always part of that experience which is beautiful. Yeah, there's an unpleasant part, but there's always a beautiful part too. There's a compassion which comes up when somebody is sick. And when you're sick and people care for you. How many times if you're really sick do people send flowers and get well cards? You know, we should not just have get well cards, we should have keep well cards. So they can send you those cards when you get better. Instead of just when you're sick. So we don't just go visiting each other, you know, when we're ill. We visit each other when we're in good health as well. It's a shame, isn't it, that sometimes that we only realize how much people care about us and love us just, you know, when we are sick. Or even, you know, what happens when we die. You know, it's amazing that sometimes when a person dies, I've been to these funeral services, and the partner, the wife, says such wonderful things about their husband. They never say such things when the man's alive. Well, maybe not in public. But when they die, they say these beautiful things. Wouldn't it be wonderful to say those things before they die? That's why I think I obviously didn't see the movie because I watched movies, but I saw that in the newspaper there's this guy, I think, United States, who had his funeral while he was still alive. And the reason why he organized his funeral while he was still alive, because he really wanted to actually to be there when people spoke nice things about him, so he could really enjoy it. You know, there's a lot of wisdom behind that. So maybe that those of you who are close to death think you're going, organize your funeral beforehand. So, you know, they can give all these eulogies and say these nice words about you, and the monks can come and just say good things about you as well. You could actually enjoy it instead of, you know, laying down in your box unconscious. It makes a lot more sense to me. Anyway, why is it that when people die they say nice things about each other, but they don't say nice things about each other when they're alive? Something's wrong there. So the idea of this sickness and the idea is that it does bring out the best in people. And sometimes that gives this beautiful silver lining in life. For those of you who think, oh, the world's a very cruel and hard place and people don't really care, they do care. They care about you, and you see that when you get sick. So when you are sick, it has its beautiful benefits. And also, as you are sick, please don't fight the sickness and try and get rid of it. Now, I know that sometimes people wanted me to give some deep teachings, you know, in the Friday nights, and that was why I was trying to give some more deeper teachings rather than what one person called the pop talks, the pop Buddhism on a Friday night. And this was one of the great monks in Thailand, actually two of the great monks in Thailand a long time ago. My teacher's teacher, Ajahn Mun, and this very famous Thai monk who only died recently, Ajahn Mahabua. And when I went to visit Ajahn Mahabua, you know, after I'd been a monk for about 5 years, you know, he actually, he would never give a talk regularly, but, you know, when he thought there was a time to give a talk, he, you know, call all the monks together without any warning, and he'd give us a talk. And I just arrived at the monastery just for a visit, and he gave this talk specifically for me. You know, he said that this is a talk for the new Western monk who's just come. And at that time, I knew perfect Thai, could understand every word of what's being said. And the particular message which I heard from him, you know, was really important. It changed a lot of the way which I looked at things like sickness and other things in life, and even the way I meditated. Because this particular story was when this very famous Thai monk, who just again passed away recently, he had malaria fever. In those days, all the monks had malaria fever. I was actually very fortunate. I had good health. I never got malaria. I got other diseases, but not malaria. It was, you know, it's occupational hazard, because, you know, the monks lived in the forests. And in those forests, in those remote places, you know, there were so many wild animals there that malaria was par for the course. So there was this very tough monk, very great meditator, had malaria fever. And when it came down to usually 3 o'clock in the afternoon was the time for chores in the monastery, which usually meant sweeping the paths. Now, he was right in the middle of a fever, but he was a tough guy, really tough. So instead of just laying down there and resting, he put on his robes, and even though he was shaking with the fever, went down the stairs of his monk's hut, picked up a broom, and started sweeping the paths with everybody else, even though he was shaking and very weak, using sheer willpower. When the big teacher, this monk Ajahn Mun, saw him, he really scolded him. He said, "Don't be stupid. You know, you've got malaria. That is not the way of a Buddhist monk to fight. The way of a Buddhist monk is to contemplate, to understand. Go up to your hut, lay down, and understand your sickness. Don't fight it." And when I heard that, you know, this was Ajahn Mahabua himself telling where he got wrong and where he was reprimanded by his teacher. That really taught me just how to deal with sicknesses. How many of you, when you've got a sickness, fight it? And what happens when you fight? It gets worse. You have collateral damage, is what happens when we fight things. You fight your partner, you fight the government, you fight whatever, you get damage. especially if you fight your sickness. Instead, understand the sickness, because that is what is there for, to teach you. In other words, we don't use willpower to overcome the problem. We always use wisdom power. Fighting is willpower. The strongest wins. And you try and be so strong you beat your sickness. That's not the way of Buddhism. The way of Buddhism is not to fight, but to understand. To use wisdom power. And that's how I've used my body and my mind ever since. Never fighting things, but understanding and using the great wisdom. And that's worked so many times. There's so many times this has happened, even with sicknesses. One of the stories which I recall, which was really strange, it's one of the first times I realized just how, if you can understand sickness, sometimes it just vanishes. I was a student, and one morning I had a terrible cold. It was so bad, the eyes were watering, the nose was streaming, felt really terrible. And I just had to lay in bed that morning. I felt really bad. And I weren't imagining it because, all the water was leaking from your face and going all over the place. And all my friends in the house, which we shared, had gone off to university, gone off to do their lectures. I was left alone there feeling awful. And it was another bell of the house. Somebody was ringing the bell. And of course, you just wish they'd go away and leave you alone to suffer in peace. But they kept on ringing. So I dragged myself out of bed in pajamas, got to the door, and found it was a delivery man. Now this was 1973, I think, 72, 73. And they were delivering what in those days was called a hi-fi system. That was actually how you would play your vinyl discs, your records, before the days of iPods. And I was very excited because I'd said this from home and I just moved to this university. And there I had some music to listen to. And it was for me. So I signed the docket and just dragged all the equipment up to my room. And of course, this is ancient stuff. It takes a while to put together. I put it all together, plugged it together, and had my first album on, which was, of course, Jimi Hendrix. I really liked Jimi Hendrix in those days. In fact, in those days, I had a Jimi Hendrix haircut. Really long hair. And my mother always was telling me to get my hair cut. When I did, she said, that's not what I meant. You're going from a lot to none at all. But anyhow, the weird thing was, by the time I put the first track on, I was listening to it, I noticed my cold, flu, whatever it was, had totally gone. The eyes were not watering. The nose wasn't streaming. It wasn't coughing or sneezing anymore. It totally vanished. And that was really strange. And I realized from that, understanding illness, if you give it ill will, fighting, it actually makes it worse. You give it a little bit of kindness, a little bit of joy, a little bit of fun. And that weakens it enormously. You can even let it vanish. Never underestimate the power, the energy of joy, of happiness. And that's one of the reasons why you had these doctors like Patch Adams, who would just go around the wards just making people laugh. And of course got great results. That's one of the ways I usually visit people who are sick, except one lady. It was the first time she had a problem in hospital. She had a small operation, actually quite a large operation, hysterectomy. And she was so a bit disturbed, she asked, please come and visit. So I went to visit her. And when I went into the room, the first thing she said was, Ajahn Brahm, please, 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 no jokes. Because any woman who's had a hysterectomy, you know you've got this big wound in your tummy. And if you start laughing, that really, really hurts. But I can't change my character. When you say no jokes, that's just encouraging me. So off I went telling jokes. So I'm a very bad person to invite if you've got an operation. Wait till the wound is healed, then invite me. It's much better. But that's actually what you do. You sort of, you know, cheer people up. Make them laugh. And a lot of times the sickness gets less or even disappears. It's amazing what can happen. Actually, that I was just writing this story for someone the other, a couple of days ago. And it's not just being sick, it's understanding what sickness is and actually how to deal with it. When you visit people in hospital, and this story was about a Tibetan nun, no, she's Australian, but she followed Tibetan tradition, so she was a nun here in Perth. And unfortunately, she got very bad cancer. And I was looking after her for a while. You know, she came to stay at Serpentine Monastery, a bit of peace and quiet, learn some more meditation, maybe sort of get over the cancer, but that wasn't to be. She was dying. And so eventually she was in the hospice, you know, the old hospice in Shenton Park, you know, before it was closed down. It's a terrible thing to close that hospice down, but anyway. She was staying in there. I visited her a couple of times. But then she called me at Serpentine Monastery. And she said, I'm going to die in a couple of days. Can you please come and visit me again? And it's really strange, but the doctors didn't realize she was going to die in a couple of days. But I've heard this so many times. When a person, you know, who is, you know, pretty terminal, they say a couple of days, they're right. There's something inside of you knows roughly how long you've got. I see that so many times, because actually it was 2 days she did die, the 2 and a bit days, not 3. So, because she said she was going to die soon, that, you know, no need to say I can't come today, I'll come tomorrow, I had to come straight away. So, you know, I am quite busy, I do many, many things, but now I stopped what I was doing, and I got one of the men staying in Bodhinyana Monastery to get the car, to drive straight from Serpentine to Shenton Park. Now, in those hospices, like even in the hospice today, there's one in Murdoch I've been visiting. In those hospices, you can't just barge into somebody's room because, you know, they're really sick. So you have to check in with the duty nurse, first of all. So I went to the duty nurse's counter and said, look, I've come to visit this lady who's a Buddhist nun. And the nurse was this very fierce nurse, you know, about in her 40s. And in the book I said, she gave me a Maggie Thatcher stare. No! You can't visit her. She's given instructions. Absolutely no visitors. But I'm a tough monk inside. So I said, look, I've come all the way from Serpentine. It's an hour and a quarter. He said, I don't care about that. We have to respect our patient's wishes. But she called me about an hour and a quarter. She asked me to come. Oh, and she gave me this look which could fry an egg. And she said, come with me. She was very angry. But you know, being a monk, you don't get intimidated. So it's a waste of time getting angry at me. You just, you know, just smile. Yes, yes, yes. So anyway, I went with her. And he went to this patient's door. And it was true, on the outside of the door was this big sign. Absolutely no visitors. And it was handwritten, she'd written it herself. And this nurse looked at me and pointed and said, see? She didn't do the so I just made that up for effect. And so I looked, and you wouldn't believe what actually was written underneath, because that was in big letters, absolutely no visitors. And underneath, in very, very small letters, was just the 3 words, except Ajahn Brahm. Now, this was very unmonkish, and I'm a bit ashamed of it, but I did enjoy it, because I turned around to that nurse and said, see? Now, that was not the most charitable thing to do, but I do confess, you know, it's nice getting, you know, one up on such a nurse. So, of course, I went in. But, of course, the first thing I did when I went into the room was say, why did you put that sign up? Why did you say absolutely no visitors except me? And that's when she told me, she said, look, you know, I'm dying. And all these people coming in here, and you know, with all their sadness, all their emotional baggage, it's bad enough for me to die without worrying about all these other people's problems as well. He said, you're the only person who comes in here and treats me like a person, not a sickness. When I heard that, I thought, wow, what a wonderful piece of advice to give others. When you go and visit someone in hospital, they might be dying or whatever, please, they're not a sickness, they're not a cancer, they're a person. So treat them as if you were having a cup of coffee with them, you know, Gloria Jean's or Starbucks or wherever. You know, what would you talk about if you're just having a nice afternoon together? They wouldn't keep on talking about their cancer, how is it, how many days, what do the doctors say, what do the x-rays say? Gee, you get fed up with that. So she just again asked, please, tell me some jokes. Tell me some funny stories. Which is, you know, what people would like to do. They know they're dying, but they want to enjoy the last days of their life. They want to have happiness and fun like we all do. Why not? Why should dying be so miserable? So I say, die with style. Die with a smile on your face. Actually, I remember telling a joke once. When I tell a joke, you know, I laugh, you know, at my punchline before I say it. That's one of my big problems. So the monks will tell you that one day I was choking, laughing at one of my own jokes. And they really thought I was going to go. One day I will go that way, I think. That's okay. I tell a little joke. This is one of the great comedians in England some years ago. You know, he was actually telling his life story, and he said when he was at school, he told his teachers that he wanted to be a stand-up comedian when he grows up. He said, when I told them I was going to be a stand-up comedian, they laughed at me. Now I am a very good stand-up comedian. They're not laughing now. And he was the same way. He said, when I die, I'd like to die in my sleep like my father did. Not screaming and shouting like the passengers in the bus he was driving at the time. You get that one? Anyway, it's just a bit of fun. Now, just me having fun and laughing like this. You see, it works. I mean, I was coughing, you know, just a few minutes ago, and where's my cough gone? So it actually works. A bit of fun and games and laughter. Just see, it does, you know, increase your immune system. It gives you energy. You don't feel so depressed. And so it's a great way of overcoming your sicknesses. So please never feel guilty when you're sick. Learn how to be happy with sickness. It's good for you, good for others, and why not? All it is just changing the paradigm. Sick. Oh, you must feel terrible when you're sick. Oh, it must be really hurt, or whatever. It hurts if you think it's going to hurt. This is the ordinary psychology. The worst thing which a doctor or a dentist could do, they've done this to me before, stupid, they say, this might hurt. Thank you very much. He just told me afterwards. Because when you say it's going to hurt, you know, you psych yourself up, this is going to hurt. Instead, if I was a doctor or a nurse or a dentist, when I was putting them through this, this is going to be fun. It would actually changes the whole attitude towards it. And I think it may actually work. So that way we can take away the sort of the negativity, the guilt, And because, as the Buddha said, the mind is the forerunner of all things. Just what you add on to this world, I know this from my own meditation, what you add on to this world is the most important thing. The world is like, I said, it's like when I was a kid, used to have these colouring books, had black lines on white paper, had different numbers, you know, colour this one red, colour this one blue, colour this one purple. And it was actually how I coloured them in made the texture, the richness of the drawing, the painting. But in our life, I couldn't colour anything. Worse. I couldn't colour whatever I wanted. I was limited. But I could colour it beautiful. I could colour it dull. I could be careful. I could be sloppy. It's actually what I added to life was more important. And that's actually what the law of karma means. You know, it doesn't matter what you have to deal with in life, but what you do with it. What you add to it, how you relate to it, how you deal with sickness, that is more important than the sickness itself. And that's what it gives, this enormous freedom, enormous possibilities. Even with the worst sicknesses, you can make something of this. It's an opportunity for other people to be compassionate towards you. It's realizing the nature of this body and life, so you never take health for granted. When you are healthy, you make sure you use those healthy days the best possible way. You don't think, oh, I'll do it tomorrow. Oh, just no. Make sure the really important things in life you do today when you're in good health. I mean the really important things, not the things like making money and stuff like that. The important things are being with your family and being with the people you love, the relationship parts, the really important part of life. Yeah, do that when you're really healthy. And that way, you know, you can find out that sickness has a meaning in life. And it's not something to feel guilty about, not something to sort of reject, not something to fight when it's there. To understand, what is its meaning? What is it teaching us? Why is there sickness here? Because everything has a use, everything has a meaning, everything has an opportunity. So when you are sick, learn from it. Don't fight it, understand it. And that means you can become a very wise, compassionate person in this world. And sickness doesn't last. You know, that one time I had a very bad sickness. I had scrub typhus. And look, this was really tough times. I was staying in this was 1976 or 1975. And I was staying in this hospital in the northeast of Thailand. Now, it was a third world country at that time. And the northeast was the backwaters. That was a place of subsistence farmers. It was a very poor part of the world. And of course, we went to the monks' ward, which was the toughest of them all. There was a ward with about five beds on one side, five beds on the other side. And I had this terrible fever, admitted to hospital. And when it got to about 6 p.m., the nurse disappeared. And I was waiting for the night nurse, 7 o'clock, 8 p.m. Still no night nurse had appeared, and it's in an isolated ward. And I asked the monk in the bed sitting next to me, lying, I said, where's the night nurse? Should we sort of ask, you know, somebody complain that they haven't arrived yet? And the monk said, there is no night nurse. There's never a night nurse. If anything happens to us in the middle of the night, it's just bad karma, that's all. That wasn't very reassuring. I wanted to go home. So for 12 hours of the day, we were left to our own resources. And there's some very sick people in that hospital. And then, of course, because they didn't know what I had at the time, they just inject, you know, these antibiotics, a cocktail, into your backside. But injecting was not quite the same as they do these days. Because, you know, these were the times of recyclable needles. So they'd use them in Bangkok first. Then they'd send them to the provinces. And then the last of all was the monks, because we were supposed to be the tough guys. This is no exaggeration, because the nurse, this nurse, maybe 30 or 40 years of age, she was built like a water buffalo. She never injected. stabbed you in the backside. Not joking, that really hurt. You were a tough monk. It was like going to the, in the old days, the headmaster's office. After about 2 or 3 days, my backside really was more sore than anything else. And even though I was supposed to have loving kindness to all beings, not that nurse, no way. I hated that nurse. Every day, twice a day, she'd come in. Nothing really helped. And I was really, really weak. You know, to go to the toilet. They never gave you a bedpan. So to go to the toilet, you know, the lucky monks were the ones next to the toilet at the end of the ward. Now, literally, you stood up, and that took a lot of energy. And, you know, they had these old bed frames, the old metal bed frames. It was only maybe about 2 foot, 3 foot, you know, to the other bed. And you'd wait, you'd lurch for it. And you know, once you'd lurch for it, you grabbed onto it and tried to steady yourself because you were really, really weak. And it took about half an hour to work to the end of the ward, go to the toilet. But when I was in the toilet, I stayed in there for a long time because I didn't want to make that journey too many times a day. So, I mean, and I'm not exaggerating. That's how it was, you know, in a third world hospital a long time ago. But you know what happened? My teacher, Ajahn Chah, came to visit. Now, this was a very important monk. And when somebody like that comes to visit you, you know, really important, it's like the Queen coming to visit you. That's what I thought. And, you know, straight away I was really so, you know, uplifted. You know, oh, it's great, you found the time to come and visit me. It's wonderful. And that was the first time I had any happiness in many days, seeing your teacher come to visit you. But that happiness only lasted about 1 minute. Because what Ajahn Chah told me, I wasn't quite ready for. I think you know because you know this story. What he said to me, now, they were really, really sick in hospital. And at last somebody came, you know, really uplifted me. He said, Brahmawangsa, that's the full name, you know, Brahm, you'll either get better or you'll die. And then he left. Thank you very much. But that really meant that. You think the worst thing is you can't fault the monk. It's so true, you know. You'll either get better or you'll die, and that's it. So if you're going to visit your grandma this weekend in hospital, don't try that, please. You either get better or you'll die. But you know, that's really true. So you don't stay in hospital forever. So all sickness passes. You know it's going to pass. And one way or another, it's not going to be there for too long. You're either going to die or you're going to get better. So sickness never lasts. So you can bear with it for a time. And I'm sure I'm not going to die of a cough. So I'm not going to be too upset about that. So I'm sure you're going to have me here next, not next week, I think another month's coming next week, I'm teaching a retreat. I'm sure you're going to see me around many, many more times yet. So, whatever you are, you might as well laugh at the sickness and have good fun. So whenever you do get sick, you know, just keep the investigating mind. And never feel guilty, because guilt, things which are wrong, will bring us, will make you afraid, and make you negative, which will make the sickness worse, which will make everything more painful. So keep it light. You know that it's possible. I often hope that when I really get sick, I can emulate one of the monks I really respected. He visited here many times, but not recently. That was Venerable Kesari Dharmananda. He's got a few books in the library. He was this head monk in Kuala Lumpur, Malaysia. And the doctor told me this. It's also in his biography. When this monk was diagnosed with terminal cancer, he had cancer before, he had diabetes, but this was the last illness. The doctor said, look, the cancer is terminal.
nothing much we can really do, you're going to die. And the doctor said it was the only person he's ever said that news to who burst out laughing. The monk laughed. Now that's a real monk. They say you're going to die and he just laughs. That's a monk after my own heart. Hopefully that I will do that when I've been told I've got terminal cancer. Can you do that? If you do, you understand sickness. It's nothing to be upset about. Why not laugh? Does it take away your chance of recovery? Does it make life worse? You're going to die? Why not laugh? You have the choice. If you understand sickness, why not? Always do things a different way. Don't follow the crowd and do it the other what other people do. Why not make your own decisions in life? I always say, when people shout at me in the street, they don't really do that these days, or they try and get angry at me, I say, I never allow other people to control my happiness. They can do whatever they like, they can say whatever they like, but my happiness is my business. I never allow sickness to control my happiness either. Why? You don't have to. As the Buddha said, even though the mind is sick, even though the body is sick, the mind doesn't need to be sick. Your mind is much more powerful than you expect. And even though you may be sick, you can still laugh and be happy. Why not? Never allow your sickness to control your happiness. People do that. I've done that. That great monk, Kesava Dhammananda, did that. Beautiful. Even people in great pain have done that. I'm finishing off with one of my heroes. And this hero is not even a Buddhist. He was a Christian. He's one of my heroes who I always look up to. It was a guy called San Lorenzo, otherwise known as Saint Lawrence. Like most of my heroes, they usually get into trouble. So he got into trouble, you know, but in those days, I got into trouble by ordaining bhikkhunis, but you know, it's much easier these days. They didn't have the Inquisition. But in those days, they had one. So he ended up, I'm not quite sure what he did to upset people, but you know, he said something wrong, and he was being, and it wasn't actually burnt on a stake, he's actually been roasted on this piece of iron. Just a terrible way of torturing people. You know, being killed, executed. But before he passed away, his last words, and that, now you know how it hurts when you even burn a finger? It's supposed to be one of the worst pains you know, a human being can endure is actually burning. And just before he passed away, he said these words, his last words. And his last words were, it was in Latin, but the translation was, "Turn me over, this side's done." As if he was a sausage or a piece of toast. Wow. He cracked a joke. It was his last words when he was in great pain. Now the reason that inspires me was it just shows that in immense pain, his mind was still free enough to be happy. That gives each one of us hope that it's possible. Doesn't matter how sick you are, even how much pain you have, you are still free to laugh. What a wonderful freedom that is. Even though the mind is sick. Sorry, keep on saying that. Even though the body is sick. Must be one of these awful slips. Even though the body is sick, I've got a cough, okay, I'll blame it on the sickness. Even though the body is sick, the mind does not need to be sick. A great saying of the Buddha. Even though the body is sick, the mind doesn't need to be sick. Please remember that.
You'll understand sickness, and I will remember it too, hopefully. And that way, when sickness comes into your life, you can have a much better time. So that's the talk for this evening. I got away with it again. 1 hour with a cough and enjoying myself. I hope you enjoyed it too. Take care. Okay, any comments or questions about the talk this evening? Wow, silence. Okay, Eddie, I can always rely upon you for a question. Come on. Yeah. Yep. Just for 1 minute,
meditate whether you live or you die.
Yeah.
Don't you think these obsidian monks, have special powers?
Oh, yeah. Sometimes they may have special powers. But the last thing you want to do with these special powers was to take away my sickness and to take away that wonderful opportunity for learning about sickness. So even if he did, much better than curing the sickness was teaching me how to understand sickness. It's an opportunity to learn. So please, it's not that sickness is a bad thing which we must avoid at all costs. It's opportunities. Again, Ajahn Mun's advice to Ajahn Mahabhoa: don't fight the sickness, understand it. Learn from it. It has much to teach us. Compassion, peace, understanding we don't control our bodies. We just live with our bodies. They get sick when they want to, and the most inconvenient times. This is our life. We can be happy no matter what.